covering the world. This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Extreme heat is risky for pregnant women and babies in the womb. It can be fatal or may increase chances of diseases in the child later. Adrian Gordon is a clinical professor in obstetrics with special knowledge on neonatology and heat. She leads clinical research and co-authored over 100 peer-reviewed papers. From the Faculty of Medicine and Health, University of Sydney, Adrian Gordon, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Good morning, except I don't think it's morning for you.
You never know what time it is somewhere in the world. How serious is extreme heat and humidity for expectant mothers?
Okay, well, we have quite a lot of data now from different countries and different areas showing that the risk of important adverse pregnancy outcomes are increased with exposure to extreme heat. And the sort of outcomes that we are worried about are preterm birth, so going into labour before 37 weeks and having that baby early, which has got its own complications. It increases the chance of babies being stillborn, so dying before birth. And there is also a higher risk of babies being born with low birth weight. So these risks are a little bit different in different studies, but are around sort of 1.2 up to 1.5 times higher in population-based studies that have looked at heat and pregnancy outcomes.
Does the heat affect the core temperature of mother and the unborn differently than people in other stages of life?
So that is an excellent question. And I guess the short answer is we don't have enough data yet to actually know if this is a risk that is mediated through changes in core temperature. So we have just recently been funded by the Wellcome Trust to do a study trying to work out exactly that. So along with Ollie Jay and the Heat and Health Research Team at the University of Sydney, we are going to run a study across two different countries, India and Bangladesh, looking at individual measures of temperature and pregnancy outcomes, and then a climate chamber trial where we'll actually measure core temperature when women are exposed to different heat and humidity. So their team ran a study published in Sports Medicine a couple of years ago, a small study, but looking at exercise on a stationary bike in pregnancy with non-pregnant control women, and finds that actually core temperature did not differ in how it increased between those who were pregnant and those who were not. And we need to understand whether this is one of the mechanisms that leads to these adverse outcomes, because it's only if we understand the physiology a little bit better that we'll be able to offer interventions to support pregnant women to keep cool, particularly in different parts of the world like low and middle income countries.
Well, we must know something physiologically about why pregnant women are more at risk than other groups. What do we know?
I think what the hypothesis is that your ability to cool down is compromised when you're pregnant. So we know that you may heat up a little bit more when you're pregnant compared to when you're not, because you have two people and the fetus generates its own temperature about half a degree higher than the mother's core temperature. We also know that normally you cool down by sweating, and that you actually have a reduced kind of surface area so that to body mass, and that means that your ability to cool down by sweating might be compromised in pregnancy. However, the body is very clever, so actually pregnancy already does some physiological changes to compromise for the fact that you might be less able to cool. And so some of the more detailed nuances about what happens really have been hypothesized and not studied in humans. So we have a lot of data, for example, from cattle. So we know that for cows, there is a risk of extra heat. There's a risk to heat waves. This can result in the same sort of adverse pregnancy outcomes. We understand a little bit more about the physiology there than we do for pregnant women. And that's partly because pregnant women are often excluded from studies because they are you know, thought to be a vulnerable population. So we do know that yet your ability to cool down and how you deal with heat is compromised in pregnancy, but that actually there are some physical compromises that are made. For example, increased blood volume and fluid volume that actually try and sort of mitigate some of those changes. And what we really need to understand is what happens so that we can actually work out interventions.
Adrian, you also specialize in stillbirths. In fact, you are the chief investigator for the Stillbirth Center of Research Excellence. How big is the problem of stillbirths globally, and does extreme heat increase that risk?
So around the world globally, there are about 2 million stillbirths every year. So that's death of a baby before birth. And when we look across the world, the numbers are calculated from 28 weeks of pregnancy and beyond, because that's where the data is collected and stronger. So actually, you know, this is really a sort of an underestimate, because in many high-income settings, we would count these deaths from about 20 or 22 weeks of pregnancy. So if it's at least 2 million stillbirths globally every year, that equates to one baby dying before birth every 16 seconds on a global scale. And the risk of heat and stillbirth is thought to be about 1.1 to 1.2, so 10 to 20% higher in areas where people are exposed to extreme heat. Now, that 10 to 20% sounds quite small, but obviously if you apply it to those numbers on a global scale in a world that's heating up, those things are actually going to affect many more people than anticipated.
What do we know about how rising heat levels and heat waves can affect later childhood health and maybe even lifetime health outcomes?
Look, that's a really good question. I guess we know that there are other areas in pregnancy that appear to be affected by extreme heat, like diabetes and preeclampsia. And both of those things have long-term impacts on the child, as does, obviously, preterm birth or being born of low birth weight. So if there is an effect on an unborn baby from a complication to the mother, those complications can have lifelong effects in terms of cardiac health, cardiometabolic health, potentially later life risk of diabetes or obesity for the child. So those conditions, those non-communicable disease conditions, are all increasing globally, and much of that has been thought to do with rises in obesity globally. But many of those conditions are also associated with heat exposure, so they may sort of have an additive effect on lifelong health. We know that, for example, for children, so infants, toddlers, also less able to cool themselves down and may not have the kind of normal voluntary urges that we would have as adults to, you know, drink more water or access somewhere colder. So certainly in extreme heat, younger children are more at risk of heat stress. And that, of course, is important at that life stage.
Part of your work reminds me of a talk I had with Dr. Francisca Pereira of Columbia. Their team strapped backpacks on women in Harlem, New York, to measure air pollution coming into their lungs during pregnancy, yes. And they found actual changes to DNA, I think, in the womb due to smog. So moving to Australia and Canada and around the world, now we have heavy wildfire smoke as well. Have you or others studied the effects of wildfire smoke on babies in the womb and pregnant women?
So I haven't done that work myself, but there's quite a lot of work looking at outdoor and indoor air pollution, adverse pregnancy outcome, for example, stillbirth. And there are trials in other countries looking at cleaner cook stoves and stillbirth reduction. And actually a team that have run a study called the Polly Borton Trial are actually engaged in our Wellcome Trust project. So that's Camille Rains-Greeno here at the University of Sydney with the ICDDRB in Bangladesh. They ran a large trial looking at reducing household air pollution. So that's certainly one area that we know is important. And there's also been population-based studies, I think in the US Canada and Australia looking at bushfire or wildfire smoke and adverse pregnancy outcomes. There is a risk there. And clearly, with higher temperatures, the risk of those bush or wildfires will also increase. So in our planned cohort study, we will also be measuring air pollution as well as ambient temperature, as well as individual measures of temperature exposure.
So during hot, humid weather, what are the danger signs to watch for in pregnant women?
So if people are feeling hot, feeling faint, that's a perception that they would have, and they should try and seek shade, drink more water, try and be somewhere where there is wind. So we should in general be trying to be somewhere where we're sort of, I guess, cooling the air less, but moving the air more helps a lot. So simple solutions in low-income settings, like a cool rolled-up towel in front of a fan on the back of the neck, would cool people down. We know that if heart rate goes up, that can be a sign that the body is not dealing with higher temperatures. But obviously, not everyone is walking around checking their heart rate. So from a perception point of view, if people are feeling faint or feeling too hot or feeling dizzy or nauseous, then that might be a sign of heat stress. And they should try and make sure that they are well hydrated and can seek somewhere cool if possible. Obviously, in many parts of the world, you know, we have really very effective ways to keep the air cool, as in air conditioning. But for many women, particularly in low and middle income settings, you know, they might be out working in the field, carrying water, doing really marked physical exertion right up until when they have the baby. It's obviously much harder in that setting to try and keep cool, but yeah, hydration, light clothing, less exertion if possible, and somewhere where the air is moving is important for anybody, but particularly for pregnant women.
What do you want governments in developed countries to do to lead the way to help protect the next generation during these climate extremes?
Yeah, well, I think investment into maternal, newborn and child health is very important. As I mentioned earlier, pregnant women are often excluded from these kind of overarching policy areas, from clinical trials that are thought to potentially be risky. And I think unless we actually can have policy that globally applies to pregnant women as well as other adults, we will not be able to protect this population. So I guess it would be a call to ensure that pregnant women are included in policy, that interventions are targeted and tested for pregnant women so that we know they're effective, and that they're really thought about in terms of workplace and country strategies in terms of protection, because I think this is not a problem that is going away, and it's a population where we really need to think about protection and prevention and coping strategies.
From the University of Sydney, Australia, we've been speaking with Professor and Medical Doctor Adrian Gordon. You can find links to the news and science we talked about in my weekly show blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. Adrian, thank you for helping us with these important matters.
No problem. Pleasure to talk.
Covering the world, this is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.